Hello, fellow book lovers, and welcome back to the Bibliovert podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and I'm here with my best friend, Allie, and we have an incredibly special guest that we are thrilled to get to have on our podcast. We have the Allie Hazelwood joining us today, and she has one of the coolest stories, without a doubt. Originally, she's from Italy. She's lived in Japan and Germany, and she's made her way to the US to pursue her PhD in neuroscience, which is unbelievable. But she is also the best-selling author of The Love Hypothesis and has three novellas coming out this year, as well as a novel, Love on the Brain, which will be released on August 23rd. So, Allie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me. This is so fun. Thank you for having me.
This is going to be fun because we now have two Allies on the podcast. So
yeah. I can be Allison for the day if necessary.
Allie domination.
Yeah.
Y'all can start your own podcast and be the Allies or something.
Goodbye.
Yeah, I'll just sign off now. Y'all have a good time.
Oh my gosh. Cool. Well, we actually just reread and reviewed Love Hypothesis, and the episode that we did was almost completely us talking about how we just loved it. Nonstop. We made a lot of TikTok references and said about 700 times how much we love the book. So it was a really sweet read for both of us in 2021. So we have some Love Hypothesis specific questions, and then we've got some just generic questions about your writing processes, what you've got coming in the future that we're really excited about seeing. We have a couple questions from our listeners that ask about kind of where you draw inspiration from and all that stuff, because you started as fan fiction, right? Love Hypothesis was originally a Reylo fanfic.
It sure was. Yep.
I love it so much.
Are any of your other characters based on pre-existing fandom? So you've got a couple works that are coming up. Do you have any plans to make future characters, maybe Star Wars or other fandoms based?
You know, so the three novellas that are coming out were originally Star Wars Reylo fan fictions. So yeah, definitely. I usually don't read reviews, but there was someone told me, like a friend actually told me, oh, I was reading that, and I liked that the dynamic was so similar to Adam and Olive, and I was like, well, let me tell you about the fact that they, once upon a time, they were the exact same characters. So yeah, those three novellas, I mean, of course I had to change them, and I changed like physical traits, especially the second and the third novella had to be completely rewritten from the thick forms, because the first novella was like, I think 15,000 words in its thick form, and then it became 30,000. But the second and the third were like 3,000 words and 4,000 words. So I had to completely rewrite everything. My book that is coming out was not a Reylo fan fiction. Shocking, I know. And so that was interesting, having to, you know, come up with my character. I feel like such a fraud saying it was so hard having to come up with my own characters, but I really am first and foremost a fan fiction writer, and so I did struggle. You know what? There is a character in my second book who is 100% April Ludgate from Parks and Rec fan fiction. 100%. Like it was inspired by her. I love her so much. Her name is Rocio in the book. But aside from that, no, I had to come up with my own characters, and that was devastating. What am I, a writer? Come on.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Star Wars, Parks and Rec, and then all original. Brilliant.
Fortunately, yes, everything else had to be original.
If you could write about any other fictional character that's already been in movies or TV shows, which one are you kind of like, oh yeah, I could write a whole backstory for you?
Definitely Jim and Pam from The Office. Like I could literally write I have had so many fan fiction ideas. I got obsessed. And then I got really obsessed recently with The Witcher, and I was like, I want to write Geralt and Yennefer. Come on, like, look at that power couple. I just look at the angst, their inability to just be normal human beings, which they aren't. The inability to just like tell their own feelings and be together, even though they clearly love each other. That's just like my catnip. I fell in love with them. What else?
My heart is beating so fast.
Please write them.
I know, I would love to. I just don't really have time to write fan fiction. And it gets to a point where it's kind of hard to adapt characters that come from such, you know, rich worlds. But that was it. I also got, I don't know if you guys are familiar with The Boys. It's an Amazon Prime series that used to be a comic, and like I got kind of obsessed with a couple in them. It's Kimiko and Richie. But if you're not familiar with the series, if any one of your listeners is familiar with the series, they will know exactly what couple I'm talking about. But so I definitely have had moments when I was like, I wish I had time to write fan fiction, or like I wish I didn't. Okay, so that's the thing of like writing used to be my hobby, but now it's kind of my job. So yeah. I was like, I wish I still wrote to de-stress and I could just take these characters and write something about them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's now it's not the time.
If you want to write a Witcher fanfic with Henry Cavill specifically, or just like publish this one, I am here for that. Like,
I like Henry Cavill. Like, I like him in everything that he's been in. I got obsessed with him as Sherlock in Enola Holmes. Mm-hmm. I was like, I love this Sherlock. He's just like also kind of like a slightly kinder Sherlock than usual. I was so into him. I was there forever and ready to, you know, like create a love interest for him and write something. But yeah, no, I love him in everything. But as The Witcher, like 10 out of 10, fantastic job. I would like to thank everyone who's involved at Netflix in the creation of that show. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Henry Cavill. Thank you to his mom.
Also, I don't know if you have seen, but like he has given a bunch of interviews about The Witcher and he's such a nerd. Like he's obsessed with the books and like he makes sure that everyone is actually being as faithful as possible to the original material, which is just like a quality that I admire in a man. Nerdiness.
When he built his own computer, I was like, I don't know anything about technology, but I was like, that is working for me.
I know, my ovaries.
Yeah. What's happening right now?
I think I'm pregnant.
It's him reading the thirst tweets for me. Those interviews of him, like there's one where he just reads it and he goes, thanks. And I think it's like, I'm 99% sure that Henry is actually big or whatever. And he was like, why the 1%? Like, why the 1%? Yes. Every time sends me.
You know, thirst tweets are just like, not everyone is able to read them with the grace that is required. And he is. He definitely is.
So composed.
I'm getting really hot right now. Uh-huh. Okay, so on this topic of Henry Cavill and just Adam Driver as well, which thank you, by the way, thank you for writing The Love Hypothesis. Allie and I both had very similar feelings when finishing this book, and I think 100% of your readers did too. What petition do we need to sign? What organs do we need to donate to science? Like, what do we need to do to like potentially maybe possibly get an Adam POV of The Love Hypothesis? Because I would literally donate my entire body to like
your lab.
Did you see that I put out a chapter? But
which intimately familiar with that chapter. Intimately familiar with it. I've read it many a time.
Oh my God, guys, I love you. So I mean, I definitely plan to like write more, like little scenes and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know, I don't want to promise anything, but like I was thinking maybe as a pre-order campaign thing, like to thank people who pre-order Love on the Brain, maybe do like another point of view. I don't know. I have to again, it's complicated because publishing has timings that I did not expect. And like, for example, 2 months ago, my third book that's going to come out in summer 2023 was due to my editor. So like, even there's always something that you should be writing that is due and that and that it's actually not going to come out for like 10 years. it's not at all what I like. It's not like fan fiction where, which, you know, probably is something everyone knows except for me, but I was really shocked by the timing. I was like, wait, is it really due now to come out in 2 years? I was pretty appalled by that. But yeah, so I just don't have a lot of time to write around stuff like that, but I definitely want to revisit Adam and Olive. Yeah, and Adam's point of view, because I love them.
I have a very specific, in our reread, as I was going through it, the one thing that I really wanted to know was, how do you imagine Adam was feeling in that initial kiss? Because you open the book on they have their first kiss, which is a brilliant move, by the way. What is Adam thinking in that moment? And then the moment when he realizes Olive is leaving and she's terrified and he's like joked maybe a little too and she didn't pick up. What was that like from Adam? What is going through his brain in that point?
You know what's funny? That was the Adam point of view that I initially wanted to write.
Really?
And then my team at Berkeley, my, you know, marketing person and the publicity person and my editor were like, we think you should write chapter 16. And I was like, okay. I mean,
we're not mad about that decision.
No. Yeah. So I think he's just like, I mean, there is this girl that he's been kind of into for a few years. And I really feel like he wasn't like into her in a super creepy way. Like, I really do think that he just thought, you know, she was a student, he's a professor. Probably their paths are never going to cross again. I feel like maybe sometimes in the back of his head, he toyed with the idea of like asking her out when she graduated, maybe, but like, I really think he just kind of saw her and liked her and remembered her, but also he was pretty sure that nothing was ever going to happen between them because it was inappropriate, because he felt like he was in a position of power over her and he didn't want to put her in a bad position. I think his mind is blown to a degree that he didn't think possible. Like, I really do think that like for a few minutes there, he doesn't even know what's going on in the world. Like, it's like an earthquake, but he's the only one feeling it.
And reboot his brain, turn off for 15 seconds to restart.
Yeah. But then, like you said, then he realizes that something wrong is happening. Like, this is not normal behavior. And like, he also knows her a little bit from the conversation years ago. And like, he's been observing her. So he knows she's not like, he's like, is she high or something? Like, what is happening? So I think he actually is legitimately worried for her. And I really do think that he just kind of wants her to not be worried or scared or anything. That's the first thing that he's thinking, even more than, oh, I just kissed her. Like, I feel like that's something that catches up later.
He's caring for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he just wants her to be, you know, happy and stuff.
So do you think any of your future works, or do you know any of, since you had to already submit your book for 2023, multiple POVs, is that something that you're interested in as a writer, like switched POV stories? Because Love Hypothesis is just Olive's.
Yeah. So you know what, like My second book is Love on the Brain is one POV. And my third book is also one POV. But I am writing right now on my option materials. So basically what happens is that in publishing, and again, maybe everyone knows, but in case there's someone like me who doesn't know. So you first get, like, you sell your first book and you get contracted for a certain, contracted, that was the word, for a certain number of books. And mine was three. So I wrote my three books. And now that I've turned them in, it's kind of like my time to pitch to my publisher new books. And I have three books that I am pitching. And you know, like, it's, we don't know that my publisher is going to pick them up. So it's all very anxiety inducing. I mean, I get anxious with everything, but it's, I am deep in my feelings lately because I'm like, is this good enough? And one of them, I'm actually writing it in dual point of view, and because it just felt good. I feel like one of the things that I, that is very hard. So here's the deal. With dual point of view, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very hard for me as a writer to keep the tension high when the main conflict is miscommunication. And I use miscommunication a lot. I know it's kind of like a not super beloved trope, and I know that a lot of people find it irritating, and honestly, I get it, but I don't know why I love it so much. And, you know, I just like these weird situations where maybe they could be solved by a conversation, but there are also reasons why the people are not having the conversation. And I think if communication, if miscommunication and the inability of people to like tell their feelings is the reason this couple is not together yet, it's very hard to keep the tension high with dual point of view. Lack of communication and the kind of like the reader's inability to know what the male lead is thinking were kind of important for all of my books in terms of, you know, keeping the pages turning, I think. So it really didn't make sense to have dual point of view books. But I feel like this one that I am writing is an enemies to lovers that like hinges on other types of conflict. So I think maybe the dual point of view will work. But again, will my editor like it? Will she pick it up? It's really...
I will publish it.
Yeah, thank I'm you. So
long. If your editor does not like editor. It, like, I will publish it.
My new editor. Yeah. Ali is my new editor.
I can't even imagine how difficult that would be to be like, okay, I'm under contract and I've done my part. And now like, you feel like you're almost back at the starting board of like having to like, be like, here are my stuff. But so I can't even imagine what that's like. However, I will tell you that Ali and I went to five different stores the week that The Love Hypothesis was published looking for it. And everywhere we went, they were like, we're all sold out. People have been like going absolutely feral over this book. And we're like, yeah, we're feral. And we hadn't even read it yet. And so I got it on Kindle. I got it on audiobook. I've made my husband listen to it. He loves it, by the way. He's thrilled that we are interviewing you. It's so cute. All day today, he's been like, you're interviewing Ali Hazelwood tonight. I'm like, yes. I am Connor. Like, he's so anyway, I mean, I've read it three times. Ali's read it twice. We will buy anything you sell. Like, it
thank you
be
guys. Scribbles. I love the support of my new editor and publisher. Like, you guys.
We're on the team. Wow. I love it already.
Yep. So I actually work in the publishing industry, not like fun books. I work in the textbook industry. So like very much more the educational side of things, but I am excited about that potential of moving into the fiction side of the publishing pieces. So this is just like, my heart is just fluttering. I'm so excited. But
I'm really good at Googling things. So like I can do that.
She's also an excellent hype woman.
I can bring you like candy. I know you like Nutella. Like I will keep you stocked on the Nutella.
I'll pet your cats. Like,
you're hired. I can do that. Thank you.
Oh, good.
You're my co-writer now. That's it. Oh, we're co-writing.
Done. Sold.
Honored.
Hyperventilating over here.
Okay. So on that educational side of things, you have your background in STEM. Mm-hmm. You said writing was originally a hobby for fan fiction, and now it's kind of shifted into the professional world. What is that balance look like? How did your STEM background influence your journey to writing novels? We know it's obviously a topic in them, but what does that look like for you now doing both? And how has it gotten to you where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, it looks really bad in the sense that I truly am not doing my best at either of my jobs. Like, for example, you know, the deadlines that I told you about, I'm always late. My poor editor has to like remind me of stuff like a million times. My poor agent, let's not even talk about it. It's, and then on the other end of the job spectrum, I have, you know, my academic job that I am not also not doing very well. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm not a good time manager, and I wasn't when my plate was less full, and now it's more full. And it's not like you know, the good time manager within me emerged and finally triumphed, and now I am fantastic at organizing things. No, like it's stayed the same. I just get less stuff done, and so it's a problem. And honestly, I am trying to figure out how to deal with it, how to like dial back from one of my jobs at this point. You know, things are weird because both in publishing and like academia, you know, it's only this year that it became so hard, because when it was just writing, yes, it's hard and it's a lot of time. It takes time, but it's not like it's a bunch of different things. There are like the publishing emails that it's more than you would think. And then there's like, you know, marketing and publicity. And then there is just like, you know, the blurbs. And then there is like agonizing and being scared that you're not, you know, selling enough copies or doing it well enough. And then just like, you know, having 1 hour long mental breakdown. You know, publishing, it takes a lot of time. And my book came out at the end of the academic year in September. I had been at work, back at work for like 2 or 3 weeks, and the book came out. And then like the entire academic year has been like these two different things that have become really, really busy. And yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Stay tuned. I will have to make some decisions at some point. But you know what? I have to say for sure that if it hadn't been for, you know, how stressed I was while I was writing my dissertation, I started writing fan fiction in the fourth year, the fourth and last year of my PhD, because I think I was just like so overwhelmed, and I just needed something that wasn't STEM related, just wasn't, you know, academia related. I needed something outside. And at that time, my entire social circle was in academia. My entire hobbies were academia. I didn't have anything else. And then I found fan fiction. I started reading it. And I know that I would never have started writing it if it hadn't been for like just the need to have a release and something that was more interesting than my dissertation at the time, you know. So definitely like writing has been like a savior for me. It's been such an important activity when I was really down and depressed and tired.
It was so interesting reading The Love Hypothesis and being able to like, this isn't going to quite sound the way that I want it to, but trust the author and their depictions of something. Cause it's like, I don't know what it's like to be a PhD student or anything like that, but you do. And so it's like, I'm sure that there are things that like didn't go into as much detail of like how harrowing of an experience it is, or some things were made light or whatever, but it was a lot of fun to kind of be like, wow,
I have a little picture into something that I'm like reading in a book. But my question for you is, how much of yourself, obviously a lot of your experiences of being in STEM were put in the book, but how much of yourself did you put into Olive and Adam?
I mean, I definitely put a lot I think personality wise, I'm different from both of them. And like my history is different from both of them. And, you know, I've never fake dated one of my professors or one of my students, now that I'm a professor, but definitely like, I really put a lot of like my day-to-day little frustrations. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I wrote the fan fiction while I was a postdoc. I was a postdoc, and I was a postdoc for 2 years, and then I published it and rewrote it when I was a professor, which was, you know, in the last 2 years. And I feel like some of my frustration as a professor kind of like seeped into Adam's perspective. I definitely am not like Adam. I don't think I think I am.
I think your students cry? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, I mean, I actually think my students think that I'm a little bit like dumb. Like, I think my students think that I don't realize some of the things that they do. And in truth, I'm like, you know what? Like, I just don't care. Whatever.
Emails that they're always sending. Yeah. That part that resonated with me. I taught for 5 years, not anything near college level professor, but the emails, the student emails of why am I failing? The moment Adam was like, you should have your advisor send the email, I was like, I resonate with that. I understand that frustration.
It's actually a bit, and I don't, again, my editor hasn't edited my book 3 yet, so I don't know if it will stay, but like, It's like the student emails are something that like are a big part of book 3, because the main character is as of right now, again, I don't know if she will still be, but she's an adjunct professor. And I just kind of wanted to give this idea of like her drowning in student emails about like the weirdest part to me of student emails is that sometimes they write you emails without putting into context who they are or how they know you from. And like, you don't like, you have, you know, 90 students per semester. You don't know who they are or what they're talking about when they talk about the assignments, stuff like that. You're like, what is happening? What is this? And anyway, but yeah, I mean, so there were definitely, I've had frustrations towards my students since I became a professor. And then as a graduate student, I had so many frustrations towards my professors and my fellow grad students and like literally everyone in the world. So yeah, all of that stuff right into my books.
So I have a question. This one is a little bit off, but have you found that your coworkers and your students have been supportive of your writing journey?
I haven't told anyone. And, you know, Hazelwood is not my real last name. So I don't know if they know or they don't know. Like, no one has told me anything. So no one knows really at work. And this is mostly because I really do feel like there is no way of doing my job well and doing this other thing on the side. And I feel like if they knew what I'm doing, they would like be on my social media and know when I'm posting. And it's just kind of one of those things that you're like, maybe I don't want you to. That said, I kind of got like scared when the book hit the New York Times, because I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe they don't know. But like, I don't know that they do. I don't know that necessarily. Like, if I think about it, even a lot of like my favorite writers, I don't know what their face looks like. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's fine. maybe they all know.
So you're living a double life, which I think is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It's very Hannah Montana, this.
I know. Someone, you know, I don't know when, told me you're like Hannah Montana. And like, I've been thinking about it ever since. It wasn't a book club.
The bangs match and everything. I'm just like really here for this imagery.
And then to think that like your coworkers, don't even know that they're in the presence of a New York Times best-selling author is mind-blowing to me. Like, they're just living their everyday life and they have no idea.
Hey, to be fair, I don't think that people who are not in the bookish community care at all about stuff like New York Times bestseller. Like, I don't think it means anything to them, because I'm going to be honest, it didn't mean anything to me before. Like, and I read romance novels for many, many years, but I read a lot on Kindle Unlimited, for example. Like, to me, New York Times bestseller didn't really mean anything. So I don't know that they would care. I don't know. I don't know. It's scary.
I love that so much. I love it so. Okay, that needs to be like book number 8 or something, where like one of your characters is living this double life and it's this pressure of like, are they going to find out? Will they ever know? And they have no idea that they are in the presence of like actual book royalty. Like the amount of people who would fall over knowing that they were around you and they're just living their whole life. Like, I think that is so funny.
I do wonder sometimes, like, because I do know that there are people who read romance novels in my department, but yeah, I don't know. Well, okay, also the TikTok thing kind of got me worried, and I was like, there are a bunch of, I don't know, you know what, I don't know. At this point, it's like, don't ask, don't tell. That's where we're at this point.
If you see someone like walking across campus, like have your book tucked under your arm and you're just like, that's funny. Just flip it over. You'll see my picture. Oh, you want me to sign it?
Takes glasses off like Clark Kent. I am Superman.
Exactly.
Did you see yourself becoming a bestseller? Since we're talking about the New York Times bestselling list, did you see yourself becoming a bestseller for your debut novel?
No, not at all. I mean, I honestly don't think that my publisher expected it either, because you know how the book was sold out and stuff. I think my print run was normal. And I honestly think that, you know, my publisher thought that I had an advantage, which was the fact that I had kind of like, not a fan base, but like there were other people who were in the fandom with me who wanted to support me. So I had a little bit of like a writing community that would support me, and they did, but like up until, you know, the really like a couple of weeks before the book came out, that support was still like within normal limits. Like my print run, my initial print run, which is, again, for people who are not into publishing, the print run is how many copies of your print, of your book, your publisher decides to print. My print run was like, you know, normal for a debut. It's kind of, I don't want to say small, but it was normal. I think what really made the difference for me was that my book was in Book of the Month, and there were a bunch of TikTok influencers who were kind of like partners of Book of the Month, like they did advertisement for them. So they got the books and they read the books. And I think my book was one of the only two romance novels in the September Book of the Month thing. And so they just kind of read that book that they got and they liked it and they started making tweets about it. And that's kind of how it happened. But I definitely did not expect it. I also didn't think, like, I'm going to be real, in the months before, I remember talking with a bunch of people about how, you know, the New York Times bestseller list is fake and it's like curated. And I remember some people telling me, you know, it's not something that just happens. It's something that the publisher buys for you. Like they buy a placement for you or something like that. And so I just thought, well, the publisher never told me that they bought a placement for me in the bestseller list. And so it's not going there. But yeah, no, then it happened. And I don't know if my publisher bought a placement for me, but it was cool. Nevertheless.
I believe that happened organically. I mean, it really did.
I hope they're not like paying every week on your Times, because I'm like, you don't need to. I'm happy now. It's okay.
If we're your publisher and editor, we will pay.
To stay. I love my new publisher.
1 through 10, all the spots. Yeah. Like it's you. We'll figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, you know, it's not true that people are paying when you see Colleen Hoover, because she's just incredibly huge and she has 70 books on the list, which is 100% deserved. So yeah, no, she restores my faith in humanity and publishing. Thank you, Colleen Hoover.
I love it. So how has that impacted career goals that you set for yourself? Like, originally probably oriented around your degrees and mm-hmm. moving into science. Yeah. And now that you've become this best-selling author, has that impacted where you see yourself going?
Yeah, I mean, I think I will have to make decisions about that. Like, do I want to, you know, dial back on one of the two things? I'm going to be real. I definitely like writing more than I like, you know, being an academic. I had my issues in academia, with academia before, as you can tell from the book. So yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like at a point where I definitely have to make some decisions, but I also only have one book out. So it's hard to, because, you know, like, it could be that the first book sold very well and the second one, or that, you know, yeah, or that like my publisher doesn't pick up my next few books. It's just, it's a very kind of anxiety inducing situation where it's hard to make decisions and to know what to hope for, because there are a bunch of people who make these decisions for you, you know?
That would be really,
I think you'll be the next Colleen Hoover.
Yeah.
I think in 10, 15 years,
Colleen Hoover will be the next Colleen Hoover. I think she will be our Colleen Hoover forever.
I think you are going to be Allie Hazelwood. And
thank you.
That name is going to be a household name.
Get her.
Be your own author.
Again, I'll buy everything.
Yeah.
I'll just, your name's on it. Take all my money. Like,
when I think auto buy authors, your name is very, very high on that list.
Absolutely.
I hope so. I mean, I hope my publisher picks up. I promise I'm not like hoping that my publisher listens to this podcast. You know, please.
I'll send it to them if you want. Like, hey,
no need.
We'll bribe.
If you don't, we will become publishers. Like, we will.
This is a threat.
Complete career change. We don't know anything, but we will. We'll do it.
We're in this together.
Absolutely. It can be like the Allie and Allie. You know how like law agencies and everything, it's always their double name or whatever. It'll just be the Allie and Allie.
We're going to be the Allie squared.
Oh, wow.
Look at us.
Wow.
Look at us.
Can I be just, I'll be the two. I'll be just a little two.
Fantastic.
I love it. I'm here for it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So clearly you took the book community by storm. So what has been your favorite and your least favorite part of rising to bookish fame so quickly?
I think the least favorite part is that now I'm very worried about my second book, and I'm worried that if it doesn't do as well as the first, people around me will be disappointed. Like, you know, my editor, my agent, even my friends. Like, I feel like now they're like, oh yeah, but you're a New York Times bestseller. But I'm like, but what if my next isn't? And you know what? Like, a book can be successful and good and not make the list. Actually, you know, most good books don't make the list because it's not really about the quality of the books. It's about like a bunch of other factors that play in. And that is not to say that like the books that are on the list are not good. It's just to say that there are so many good books that don't, you know, are not bestsellers. So basically, yeah, I'm just very anxious that I won't be able to perform in the same way for my next few books. And it's also something that I don't know that I can, that it's not under my control, you know, because I can only write the best book that I can, but then there are so many other factors that play into it. And those are not really under my control. And I just kind of, I want my editor and my agent and my publicity and marketing team to feel like I haven't failed them. It's weird. So that's definitely like the anxiety, the constant anxiety is definitely the hardest part for me. The best part is honestly just like, the readers, like being told, oh, your book meant something to me, or, oh, I saw myself in this specific scene, or even just like your book made me laugh and I spent a good hour. It's just really nice. It's just, I don't know. I feel like I've kind of, this is going to sound incredibly like self-aggrandizing, but like, I feel like I kind of have made even a, like a small impact because, you know, even just because I make them laugh, it's like, you know, it's like when you're talking with someone and you make them laugh, it's nice. You feel like you've made them a little bit happier. And it feels the same way, you know, it's like I have done something that made them happier for a little bit of time. And that's, you know, cool. It's the best thing. That's what makes me happy. And that's kind of what I latch onto when the anxiety gets really, really high. And I'm like, oh,
I don't reread books very often. And again, I said this already, I've reread yours 3 times because I loved it so much. But before, when we were right before we did our episode over the Love Hypothesis and we were rereading it again, it was of course late, and I woke up my husband and I said, I feel like I've come home. Like, I think this is like a book comfort home, like read for me. And I didn't see it coming, and it like completely hit me out of left field. And then I got like emotional and, you know, just like all that kind of stuff. So to say that your book means a lot to me as someone who has zero science abilities like at all, but your second book is still going to be that for people. And like, there will be people no matter what who read it and they're going to say like, this book speaks to me, it's changed me, it's impacted me, it's given me the courage to do something that I didn't think I could do.
I know.
Or it's resonated.
That's, you know, and that's, I think, how we writers, because I talk with a lot of writers and we're all super anxious about the performance of our books and will we sell enough and stuff like that. But really, in the end, when we start writing, we do it because we have a story inside us. And what we want is to like have even just one person be happy while they read it. Like, we don't do it for fame. So really, what I tell myself when the anxiety gets high is exactly what you said. Like, really, someone will like this book. Mm-hmm. And even if it's like 10 people, 5 people, that's really all that matters. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of reframing things and being, you know, having goals that are feasible and like, you know, and that makes sense. So yeah, I get it.
Is that something like, what's your favorite piece of advice to give to new writers who are trying to break into the book production process or the publishing process or the editing process? Is that anxiety and community piece pretty foundational for you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely having people around you that you can trust and talk to is the most important thing. And I know it's easy to say, like, I got lucky because, I mean, I had friends from my fandom days that were kind of involved in writing, and then like I got lucky because my publisher Berkeley is a publisher that has a lot of books and a lot of authors. So we kind of like formed a Berkeley debut server for, you know, 2021, 2022. And so I got to make friends with a lot of people who were going through the same thing as me as I was going through it. So it's easy to say, but you know, there are a lot of like debut groups and like on submission groups and querying groups. So just, you know, make friends and yeah, try to have someone that you can talk to about this stuff. That's definitely my main advice. And just generally, like, try to have people you can trust around you, like a good agent. My agent is perfect and I love her. And I don't know if it weren't for her, like, I honestly feel like I can trust her with everything. But it's such a, publishing is so different, and it's just it's an industry, and like any industry, it has its secrets and it's like kind of truths that are well known, but only to people who are in publishing, and it's customs. So you need to have someone guiding you through that. And that it's probably going to be your agent or someone who's already published. So try to have, you know, solid people like that around you. And I'm always like, if I'm always here for, you know, publishing advice. When people, you know, want to know something, I'm always happy to help. Yeah.
Okay, so you have three novellas coming out. I mean, so one has already come out on audiobook.
Yeah.
And then you have two others that are coming out throughout this year. So can you give us a little bit of insight about them? Because I am so excited. I'm so excited.
So they are three novellas about three best friends who are engineers, different types of engineers. They go to grad school and then they graduate and then they move apart to like pursue their careers. And what happens is that all three of them end up kind of in a weird, like professional rival situations, and they all find love with their professional rivals in different ways. So the one that's that the audiobook is already out, Stuck With You, it's about this girl who is an engineer at the Environmental Protection Agency, and she ends up kind of cohabitating with this guy who is like this big oil lawyer. And so they kind of like, you know, there's like a rivalry. The second one is about this other girl who is a civil engineer, and she ends up stuck in an elevator with this guy that she had a one night stand with like about a few weeks earlier. And they kind of had a fight after that because she found out that he works for their adversary company, the rival company, and they get stuck in the elevator together and kind of they have to work things out. And then my third one is about this NASA engineer who goes on a mission, and she gets stuck in the Arctic Circle, and it seems like she's about to die, but the guy who comes out to rescue her is her mortal enemy at NASA. So basically they were really fan fictions, heavily reworked, and they all have these like enemies to lovers flavor.
You are speaking every single one of my love languages right now. Like, oh, you also have taken some core fears I have, like stuck in an elevator, but put it in with a hot man, sold. Like, oh, they're you're in the Arctic Circle and you're about to die? Don't worry. Your hot rival coworker is going to come save you. Wow. No, I'm so excited.
They were a lot of fun to write. It was fun to write something shorter. It was fun to write. I hope people will like them. They're coming out in audio first, and then they start coming out in ebook. I'm definitely not an audiobook person myself. I don't know.
I'm not an audiobook listener either. So I'm very, very excited about the ebook versions of them.
No, I mean, same. I find audiobooks kind of hard. So
We've got plenty of people that love them. We have one listener, Eleni. She lives in Europe, and she submitted a question. She wants to know what the process is like from going from fan fiction to original works, and if you had any setbacks or roadblocks to publishing that original work because you originated in fan fiction.
You know, it's interesting. I actually think that, I mean, there have been a lot of big writers that have kind of paved the way, you know, like, of course, Christina Loren and E.L. James. So the pipeline from fan fiction to romance is there. I did have some issues. So I was on sub with my book for many, many months. So on sub is when your agent is pitching the book to editors and the editors are reading your book and deciding whether they want to buy it. And I was on sub for many, many months, and we eventually pulled the book because the feedback that we got from kind of from like two or three editors was, this reads like a fan fiction that was published chapter by chapter. It's very episodic. It doesn't have like a coherent narrative. And that was, you know, it was a very good feedback. And that's when I kind of rewrote the fan fiction. And the first third kind of stayed the same, but for example, the character of Tom didn't exist. So there wasn't like all that plot line wasn't there. And Olive's research was also a different type of research. Like she wasn't doing pancreatic cancer. So there wasn't like something driving her to do it. She was just kind of living her grad school life. So there were a bunch of things that had to change because of the fan fiction nature. But I don't think anyone was like, no, we can't buy this because it was fan fiction. Like, I don't think so. And I know of, like, there have been a lot of my fan fiction friends who have signed book deals in the past few months. So I definitely know that right now, publishers are very receptive to adapted fan fictions or fic writers trying to, like, you know, publish books.
Very cool.
That's so cool. So I have one more question for you. We like to ask this question because Ali and I are always looking for recommendations. And so what are some books that we're getting our pens, we're both like reaching for them. what are some recommendations of books that you've been reading recently that you have just loved and has just fed your little book soul?
Okay, so I actually finished the book this weekend, which was, it's called Would You Rather by Allison Ashley. And I loved it. It's so it's the story of, I think, Mia, her name is, and she has kidney issues. And basically she marries her best friend for health insurance reasons, but her best friend has been pining after her for years. So they're like fake dating. I know. And then like there are a bunch of things in both their past. Like she, for example, you know, like that good, they start falling in love and like they have to have practice makeout sessions
I love it.
But then like, you know, he feels guilty because of something that happened to his brother years ago. And she feels guilty because, you know, she has these health issues and she doesn't want like to kind of like saddle this guy. And so it's obvious that they're in love, but they're like trying to not go for it. It's dual point of view too. So It's excellent, fantastic, beautiful. I finished it this weekend and I loved it. What else have I read recently? I loved Lucy Is Not a Romantic by Lauren Ho, which is, it's the story of, it was really good. It's basically, it's this woman who decides to enter parenting agreement with this guy that she meets online. So he's basically going to donate his sperm and then they're going to co-raise a baby because like she's just done. She's done with men, she's not gonna be dating anymore, but she really wants a baby. And then they go from like co-parenting to, sorry, I think my cat is trying to break in, they go from being co-parent to being friends, and then they fall in love. It's just amazing. What else have I read recently?
It's going to sound really creepy, but I really love reading your Goodreads reviews. Your use of emojis are so
Oh my God. Funny. Oh my God. Scandalized. Okay. You have to read Scandalized by Ivy Owens. There's so much sex in it. Like it's so good, but like so well written. So well written.
Yes,
so it's about this woman. She's a journalist and she's like, she's actually like doing this really, really cool investigative piece. And in the middle of that, she meets this guy whom she remembers. Like he was like her childhood best friend's older brother. So fantastic. And like they hook up and it's supposed to be like just a one-time thing. But then he is an amazing superstar. And like she ends up in this relationship with a celebrity without even knowing it. And then he's also involved in her investigative story. It's amazing. I was just, this is such a ride. I was so taken by it. What else? I mean, I think that's all I can remember right now. Found this book. Okay.
I love Con. Oh, that looks so cute.
It's so good. It's it's the story of Kenya, I think her name is Kenya. Yeah, Kenya and Cam. Yes, Kenya, and she basically she is the super kick-ass cosplayer, and she gets she basically gets selected for this competition, and she has a very limited amount of time to make this amazing cosplay costume. And there is also a reality show that is being made while she's doing it, and she says, oh yeah, and my partner will help me, but she doesn't have a partner, so she ends up fake dating her best friend, and he has been pining after her forever. Guys, yeah, I like pining.
Done.
He's been pining.
The moment anyone says the word pining, I'm like, and as long it's not a creepy pining, it's like unrequited love pining. Okay,
yes, delicious. It's that man pining. It's just, I love it.
Delicious.
And you know, it's amazing, and it's very steamy and very good. So yeah, 100% recommend.
So every month we do a book buddy read with our patrons, and I think we're gonna, like, this month is gonna be the Allie Hazelwood book buddy read, and it's just gonna be like, okay, choose your recommend, or we'll just be like, it's going to be scandalized. We're not going to put up a poll. It's just okay, going to be scandalized. Scandalized
doesn't come out until August. Oh, I feel okay, horrible. Guys, I'm sorry.
That's good to know. I'm going to write it, man.
I have to write it. I have a calendar of book releases. Okay. So I'm going to write it.
The same day as my second book. So I am.
We'll read yours first.
I mean, honestly, well, yes, maybe yes. Please, you're my first, because I don't think, because it's so good, the other one, that if you write it after, it would be a bad look.
There's it's no competition. So good, yours is going to be amazing.
I mean, I loved it. I will, every single promotion that I'll do of my book, I will have a copy of Scandalized there. Show you. And buy this one too, please. It's so good, guys. Actually, yeah, the other ones that I recommended were also ARCs. It's because I mostly read ARCs for blurbs.
Yeah.
But the LoveCon is not. I think this is out
good
already.
To know. That one is going to be on the poll. Thank
also,
you.
Kosoko Jackson's I'm So Not Over You is coming out tomorrow, and it's fantastic. Also fake dating, but exes having to fake date and bodyguard romance. The flavor.
Ma'am, you can tell me on literally any book. Like, you know how to pick those tropes out and be like, yeah, here you go. Tropes, it's delicious. Right?
There you go. It's like on AO3, when you write fan fiction, you like write down the tags. Yes. It's like writing down the tags.
It's that's a great way to put it.
It's a transferable skill. There's years on AO3.
So last year was my first year of reading fan fiction, and I have gone down a very dangerous rabbit hole, and I love it. I love it so much.
It's once you start, it's like your world changes.
Yeah.
It's, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I saw something that reminded me of a fan fiction last night and almost started crying in the car. And like, it was Paper Cranes, and it made me think of Manacled by Sin Lin Yu. And I was like, oh, okay, here we are crying.
I haven't read it, but I haven't read Manacled, but like, I don't think, like, it has so many triggers that yes. I don't think yes. I could read it. But yes. Have you read The Auction by My Very Dear Friend?
I have.
Okay. I know. So The Auction is amazing, and it's by my very dear friend who is going to have very good news very soon. So yeah.
I love that. I have read a lot of Love That Kate's work, and just every single one of them are like,
I know. She's one of my favorite writers ever. So
amazing.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And she writes Raylo too. That's how kind of I discovered her. For Harelo, and I normally wouldn't read Dramione. Like, it's just not, I don't know why, it's not really my thing, but I had to read The Auction because you've read it.
It's so, I love it all. Well, I think tonight I'm gonna avoid all my responsibilities and go read fanfics. So thank you for that one.
I approve.
Well, that is it for this episode. We really hope y'all enjoyed it, because I had an absolute blast. That was so much fun. Allie, thank you so much for joining us. It was a delight.
Thank you, guys. It was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, absolutely check out
her book, Love on the Brain, that is coming out August 23rd of this year. I will be at Barnes & Noble at 10 a.m. because I will get my hands on the book this time.
And on Scandalized.
And Scandalized, yeah. So it's a 2-for-1 deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, to do them both. But she also, the 3 novellas are Under One Roof, Stuck With You, and Below Zero. And if you want to learn more about her, you can go to her website, AllieHazelwood.com, or check her out on Instagram at AllieHazelwood. But definitely check her out. Please go support her. If you have not read The Love Hypothesis, I don't know what you're doing. Go read it right now. It's amazing. It will change your life. But we hope you have a fantastic day. Happy reading, and we'll see y'all next time.